Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre. And I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening, you're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome to Season 9, Episode 8. I'm your host, Otis Gyre, and in this episode, I'll be performing 5 tales to terrify you, courtesy of author Kyle Harrison, about wrathful revenge, turncoat treasures, ascendant automatons, mutational medications, and grim gaming. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first 2 spine-tingling stories. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now, it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. When things get tough, some people turn to ill-advised activities to comfort them. For our first story from Kyle Harrison, one man's happy place happens to be a firing range. But when he meets another mysterious late-night visitor, it becomes a question as to who is helping whom to stop the worst from happening. Without further ado, I present to you Firing Range. I found the place one night after an especially heated argument with my ex. Now, I've never actually been the type for guns, but something about the venue interested me when I passed it by. I think it was the privacy. Open 24 hours, the bright glimmering sign said. The one employee, a half-asleep 70-something codger, let me on the range for free that first night. There was something very exhilarating about holding a weapon in my hands. I started coming back once every week just to let off a little steam. The old man never asked questions, and getting some peace and quiet really helped me unwind. I think it was my 5th or 6th trip when I met her. I was standing in one of the booths getting ready to put on the protective earmuffs when I saw this black-haired girl enter the gallery wearing what looked like pajama pants and a flannel top. My first impression was she was way too young to even be here. She had to be maybe 14, definitely not the legal age. When she saw me looking, she gave me a sneer, and I have to admit, I was actually disturbed by her. She looked like she had been through hell and back. Maybe she had. "Something on my face, old man?" she asked me, checking to see if her weapon was loaded. "Well, you know how to use that thing," I countered, gesturing to her gun in her hand. "Want to see?" she snapped back, waving the weapon in my face. "Whoa, sorry. I wasn't trying to be rude." "Well, next time, learn to mind your own business," she huffed as she finished putting the protective equipment on and went to her own booth. Nervously, I tried to redirect my attention to the target. I didn't want to be nosy, but it bothered me. Surely she shouldn't be allowed into a place like this. After I was done, I decided to walk to the owner and see if maybe he knew anything about her situation. "A girl? Here? Son, you must be crazy. I wouldn't let any kid out here on the premises." He huffed at me. "Well, check your cameras. I know she was here for at least a couple of hours." This time he laughed. "Does this look like the Taj Mahal? I ain't got any cameras. Never needed them," he cackled. I rolled my eyes at him and snapped, "Well, maybe if you put some in, you wouldn't need to worry about delinquents running around on your grounds firing guns." "Don't get an attitude with me, boy," he growled. I paid my fee and left, frustrated that he didn't seem the least bit concerned about this young girl that was using his firing range for her own personal training. What good could come from her learning to shoot? It made me worry. But at the same time, I knew there wasn't much I could do about it unless I saw her again. It didn't take long for that to happen. The next time I went, she was already there, firing at the targets like no tomorrow. When I entered, she immediately stopped and turned toward me, narrowing her eyes as I got my own equipment. "You again? Are you stalking me?" she asked angrily. "You should be glad I'm not calling the cops on your ass," I told her. "Maybe if I scared her, she'd leave." "Yeah? So why don't you?" she said, spitting on the ground. "You think I won't?" I asked, taking up my phone and getting ready to dial. I hesitated for a moment, waiting to see what her reaction was. Surprisingly, she smiled. "You ain't gonna call," she said. "What makes you say that? If you were going to do it, you would have done it already." "Maybe I don't want to get you in trouble," I countered. She walked closer to me, sizing me up quickly. "Nah, I bet you don't want anyone to know you're here either. Am I right?" she whispered. I looked down at the phone, feeling a little uneased by her nonchalant behavior. Did nothing scare this kid? "I'm here just to de-stress," I told her. "Right. Then me being here shouldn't bother you." Then she got back to her target practice, fully confident I wasn't going to call. I put my phone away, a bit perplexed by her behavior. She could slip away before the cops even got here, I told myself. No reason to get myself mixed up in it. I tried to convince myself of that, but watching her in the firing range only concerned me more. She was like a demon being unleashed. Her aim was precise, her speed uncanny. She was using this firing range as a way to let go of her rage, I realized. What was she so hateful toward? After I ended my own session, I saw her putting the gear down and commented, "What's your name, girl?" "Oh, are you trying to be the good cop now?" she hissed. "Just trying to be friendly. I have a daughter a little younger than you." "Good for you," she said, preparing to walk toward the fire exit. You don't have to be so hostile, I argued, following after her. What was I doing? Why did I care what this young girl was up to? Was I frightened by her demeanor? Worried about her welfare? I told myself that was the reason why. But another part of me knew that curiosity about her was the overwhelming factor. And why not? She asked, turning to face me. All I saw was anger and hate in her eyes. It was fearsome to look at. What? I asked, surprised by her attitude so much that I forgot what I was even saying. Why can't I hate everyone and everything? What good is caring going to do for me? She snarled. Look, we got off on the wrong foot. I didn't mean any harm, I admitted. No one ever does, but they always cause more harm. So selfish. Why are you even following me? Do you even care why I'm here? She asked. I felt cold sweat run down my neck as I had to admit that I wasn't sure. I just know that you look like you need help. She huffed and crossed her arms. Help? From you? And you think you're the one who can answer all my problems? I didn't say that. Just thinking that a girl your age shouldn't have to be alone, I argued. Thanks, but no thanks, she replied bitterly as she left through the exit. I tried to follow, but she was too quick, disappearing into the dark woods beyond. As I drove home, I thought to myself that she must have had a horrible home life. Maybe that was why she came there, to learn self-defense. That led to darker thoughts. Was she being hurt at home? Abused by family? What if she really did need help to escape? What if she did something stupid and I was too late to stop it? Stop it, I told myself. I didn't need to be involved. No one helped me when things got tough, I thought. No one ever does. I tossed those worrying thoughts away and resolved to forget about her again. But that wasn't so easy. Every time I went to the firing range, she was there now. She'd always have this intense look in her eyes when she held the gun. Her aim was precise. She knew what she was doing. It bothered me to see her unload clip after clip into lifelike targets. Was she planning to hurt someone? Usually, I did my best to keep to myself. I had my own reasons for being there, and I wasn't about to judge a kid that I hardly knew. Heck, I didn't even know her name. But every time I went, it felt like she went out of her way to bother me. So much for wanting to be left alone. One particular evening, the conversation went a little further than I expected. She asked the real questions, and I wasn't ready. You've been coming here for a few months now. Don't you think you've figured out what you're going to do yet? She asked me as she put up her equipment. I suppose I could ask you the same thing, I pointed out. I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to make people pay for hurting me. The way she said it so casually made my stomach twist into knots. It's that bad, is it? I said, trying my best to hide my own surprise and shock. Hey, you wouldn't understand, she snarled, turning away. Instinctively, I placed my hand on her shoulder. Wait, just try me. What did these people do to deserve this?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
There was a fire in her eyes that I couldn't ignore. It told me a lot about what I'd already suspected. Her pain was real. This wasn't simply acting out. Someone had broken this poor girl. It was no wonder she didn't trust anyone anymore. Did she even have anyone left to trust? They call me names. Other times they beat me. Left me for dead. Sometimes they do much worse. Make me wish that I was dead. She said as tears welled up in her eyes. Boys and girls, both. Treating me like trash just because I was different. Because I chose not to be what they wanted me to be. Do you think that this is the answer? I asked, looking at the gun she'd just put down. I won't stop. I've tried being the good guy. I've tried earning their friendship. I'm tired of pretending that I'm fine, of hiding my anger and rage. This'll make them listen. She looked at me, and for a long, silent moment, we connected. She knew my secret, too. You understand, I can tell. You've been disrespected, hurt, and tossed aside, like you're worthless. You're tired of that feeling, tired of being pushed down and forgotten. This isn't about me, I insisted. You sure? Because you think I haven't watched you the same way you watched me? I see that spark of revenge in your eyes. You're trying to give yourself an excuse to do what you don't have the courage to take revenge on the people that have wronged you. I was speechless. She was saying everything that I had felt, and it made me want to die. I was trying to tell myself that I could be a monster. So what are you waiting for? What's holding you back? She whispered. I looked down at my own weapon, my hands clammy and pale. I didn't have an answer for her. She pulled away, a look of contempt on her face. Scared of the consequences? Make them pay. Make them suffer for everything they've ever done. Make them remember you. She insisted. I decided to change the conversation, unnerved by the direction it was going. Strong words for someone that I don't even know, I told her. I don't have to answer to you, she responded without even batting an eye. Why don't you tell me exactly what it is you're planning to do? I don't have to answer you either, I said, taking a step back. She huffed. Here I thought we were getting somewhere. She shrugged and left the firing range, this time leaving a void in me of nagging doubts and fears. How did she know of the dark thoughts that had consumed me this past few months? How was I supposed to help someone if I couldn't even help myself? I felt even more lost and bitter than I had before. My guilt and anger mixing to make me think maybe I should just turn the weapon on myself. Make the world a better place, one less nasty art to deal with. But I couldn't do that. Not until I stopped her from doing something insane. Not until I found a way to save her. It became my sole purpose to keep going. Maybe I can't save myself, but this young girl doesn't need to experience the consequences. She doesn't understand. At least I know what I'm getting myself into. This is what I told myself. Faulty reasoning to keep me afloat. We only met one more time after that. It was another typical night at the range, and she did her best to ignore me. I wanted to knock some sense into her because I saw the darkness she held inside her, and I recognized it was the same void that I'd been carrying for so long. It was unnatural how much she reminded me of myself. I looked down at the gun I was holding, then toward the target. I'd been to this range a dozen times, all for the same reason. Psyching myself up to do the unthinkable. Just pull the trigger and make the people that have hurt you pay. They deserve to suffer. That's what the girl had said. It was suffocating to be boxed into a life that I didn't choose for myself. I lost so much because of others. My family, my job. Don't I deserve to take it all back? The girl fired again, smiling as her target fell apart into tiny splinters. What was she planning to do? Was it any less gruesome than my own vendetta? We were here to be each other's advocates? Or to play the part of the conscience that needs to be rekindled? You can't do this, I said abruptly as our session ended, and we caught each other's eyes. Excuse me. You heard me. It's unthinkable. Whatever it is you're going to do or think you're capable of, you can't do it. You'll be throwing away your entire life, I told her. Yeah, she said as she started to chew some bubble gum. You sure that speech was meant for me, old man? I squirmed uncomfortably. She could see the same guilt written all over my face. I don't have anything left to live for, I told her. They've taken it all away. So what are you waiting for? Why are you trying so hard to save my soul? She spat back. Don't you get it? It's too late for me. How can you say that? I asked. She stepped closer to me, a shadow crossing over her face, and I held my breath. This young, vibrant girl was a fraud. Instead, what stood in front of me was a ghoul. Her skin peeled off immediately in the pale moonlight. Her bone and tissue pushing through as her eyes dangled from her skull. Her body was yellowed and old, decayed with age. The very definition of a walking corpse. Instinctively, I fumbled backward into my booth. She smiled this grisly, otherworldly grin at me and kicked my weapon to my trembling hands. Go on, then. Pick it up, she whispered. I was too paralyzed to move. This only made her laugh. I stuttered as she looked at her rotting shell. At first, it looked so frightening to behold. Then, as she got closer, I saw only sadness. Bullet holes laced her body, ripping through her skin and turning it into cottage cheese. I told myself the same things you've rattled off in your head a dozen times. That it would be quick, that it would be easy, that they deserved it, she whispered. She picked up my gun and held it right over my head as I started to sob. Ironic, that's exactly what my classmates did when I shot them. They begged. They swore they'd give me anything. At that moment, I had the power. I was their god. She fired a round at the target, and my whole body shuddered. But then it was over. It was gone. And do you know what I felt then? Another round. This time I heard so much remorse and regret in her voice. Nothing. I felt nothing. I was numb. The people I hated were dead, and I didn't even feel better. It was for nothing. She looked up toward the sky, and I saw tears stream down her broken face. I could hear the police circling. I was bleeding out. I knew exactly what they would call me when this was over. I had just destroyed my family, destroyed everything I never cared for. All it took was a couple of damn bullets. And you know what I kept thinking as I died? She whispered. What? I asked, barely even hearing my own voice. I was lost in her story of regret and violence. How much I wished that I had someone that had stopped me. Someone that had reached out to me. Someone that told me they cared before it was too late. She looked at me with hollow, dead eyes, and yet, at the same time, I'd never seen anyone so full of life. It was like I was looking at myself, and then She confirmed why she was really there. I wish I had met someone like you when it mattered. Then she turned the handle of the gun toward me and whispered, "Don't make my mistakes." I took it and watched as she crumbled away, her ghostly face and body whistling into the night air. I sat on the cold ground for a long time, feeling the weight of that gun. It was heavier than I'd ever noticed before. Was this really something I could carry? How could anyone? I put the equipment away and paid the fee. The manager lazily took my money and muttered, "See you next week, bud." My mind flashed to all the dark thoughts I'd contemplated for so long, and then back to the girl at the firing range. The choices she'd made when no one had stopped her. Was that the path I really wanted to go down? Could I be for myself what I'd tried to be for her? There was only one way to find out. I tipped my hat to the owner and gave him a smile before fixing him a response. "No, I don't think you will." I hope you enjoyed Firing Range by author Kyle Harrison, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed that first tale and would love to read more from tonight's very talented author, you can help support them by visiting simplyscarypodcast.com/Harrison. Mr. Harrison is no stranger to this podcast or to the many other who've viewed his extensive body of work on the internet and beyond. If you do decide to stop by his profile, please leave Kyle a kind word and let him know you heard about him on this show and that Otis Gyre sent you. It would mean a lot to me. Thanks again for your support of this program and of tonight's featured author. As for that last story, guess she saw right through him, eh? Too bad it took a little more effort on his part before he could do the same for her. You know, it's not every day that someone goes on vacation and manages to locate a rare and wonderful treasure. Unless, maybe it happens to everyone except me. But for one lucky couple, they just found something that seems to make every dream of theirs come true. But is there a price? Let's take a look at Kyle Harrison's second tale of terror and find out. Without further ado, I present to you Good Eggs. Summer homes are for rich people, Alan. I've been known to spend money on things that I don't need. Sometimes it can be hard to determine which products are necessities and which are simply desires. My wife, Brittany, is usually the one who keeps my head on straight, chiding me whenever there's a large receipt on our credit card bill, or switching the channel when a fancy new one comes on TV. Suffice it to say that I may have some impulse control. She says it stems from my upbringing. Growing up, I was basically never without. Now, I'm not trying to say that my folks made me spoiled, but they also probably could have sat me down and explained how the real world works. My parents had money, but they also insisted, when I got married, that I needed to learn to stand on my own two feet. That's why, for the past 6 years of our marriage, I took every extra shift, every holiday, and every swing shift that my job offered. It was, in my mind, savings for the dreams I wanted to achieve. And that dream finally paid off a few months back, when I was given a raise and got the chance to sign Brittany and me up for a sweepstake. Nobody ever wins those things. It's just a scam. You're wasting your time, my wife told me. But she changed her tune when that brochure came in the mail. Instead of "what if," it became "when." They have cottages all over the world, Asia, the Caribbean, even Europe, I told her excitedly as I won her over. Now her eyes were starting to sparkle. "Do you really think that we can go to Europe?" she asked. I showed her the options, asking her to choose which one she wanted to go to. All I had to do was ask for the time off. How about Hungary? I've always wanted to go there. Brittany asked excitedly. Sure. Maybe in June? July? We could check with Steve and Rachel. Make it a getaway we always wanted, I said. Let's just make it you and me, she insisted with a smirk. I liked when she was playful and flirty. It reminded me of our time dating, like we were kids again. We agreed for the third week in June, and before long, we were actually packing our bags. You never really think about how much stuff you take with you on a trip, but when you start staring at the luggage and it begins to pile up, you make decisions that you normally don't have to. Budget was limited, and we knew we could only carry one overhead bag, so the stuff we thought we needed started to become less and less. It was a tough decision, figuring out what was a need and what was a want, but finally, Brittany said it best. Whatever we don't need, we can get when we get there, she said in exhaustion. That seemed the wisest choice. So, after the last few weeks passed, it was finally time to go. Getting there seemed to happen so quickly, we hardly got the chance to even take in the scenery. Admittedly, we were so invested in getting there that we didn't really focus on what was happening around us. The cottage itself was amazing. It felt like we were stepping back into time. Every part of the property was designed to resemble an antique, with cobblestone paths and perfectly blended wooden beams and stone mortar. It was everything we had ever hoped for and more. Oh, I could stay here forever, my wife said as we took in every part of the retreat. It felt good to see her smile and to know that the hard work I'd put in was finally paying off. The beautiful countryside and tranquil noises we heard on a daily basis were enough for anyone to get lost in a daydream. But eventually, I decided not just to take it all in, but actively find ways to enjoy it. So I sat up on the recliner and took out my laptop. Then, when I activated the system, I discovered I didn't know what the Wi-Fi password was. It was the first time that I had done so, and I guess I was on autopilot, assuming that we would be connected. So I got up, carrying my laptop from place to place, trying to search for a signal. But I wasn't picking up a thing. What are you doing? Brittany asked as she stepped out of the shower and saw me standing there looking like a fool, waving my computer around like some type of divining stick. The internet's down, but I can't seem to pick up a signal, I admitted. I saw a breaker box in the basement. Maybe it's connected down there, she suggested as she started to blow dry her hair. I nodded absently as I put my computer down and started down the stairs. The cottage was designed with three levels, almost like a jungle bungalow. The main floor we stayed on was actually elevated above the facilities available for laundry, the hookups for gas, and, of course, my current problem, the internet. But I soon found out that the issue was greater than just a switch needing to be flipped. There, skittering across the floor, was a mouse, or perhaps a rat, that had just been chewing on one of the wires. My first thought was one of disgust and frustration. This was supposed to be a private getaway, and now it was turning into a pitfall at every turn. But I tried not to overreact and watched as the mouse pushed its little body through the floorboard to the crawl space below. I went back upstairs to tell Brittany I was going to grab some supplies to get under the cottage. Why are you doing that? Shouldn't your boss be able to send someone out? She asked. Oh, it shouldn't take more than 5 minutes, I assured her as I found a few tools in one of the pantries and made it to the door. Just my luck. The rain started again as I got down on my knees to try to see a place where I could fit under the property. My plan was simple. Find the nest where the mice were hiding, and then buy some traps to rid us of the problem. If we were going to be here for a while, I didn't want these vermin to cause a bigger problem. I never made it that far, though, because something else, just as unique, caught my attention. I was waving the flashlight back and forth amid the crawlspace, trying my best not to let any type of claustrophobia get the better of me, when I saw a tiny, oval-shaped egg near the center of the house. As I got closer, I realized that it appeared to be buried in a mound of dung, giving the entire segment of the house this weird, rotten smell. Curious, I began to push my fingers and free the egg, puzzling over the fact that it appeared to be as hard as a rock and black as night. Slowly, I pushed my body back out of the hole and stood up, getting a better look at the large, dark egg in the light. It was about half the size of a normal hen's, and looked like it had been sitting under the house for ages. "What's that?" I heard Brittany ask from the porch. A crack of thunder surprised us as I ran up the steps to where she was standing, and I showed her the thing, remarking, "Found it under the house. What do you suppose it is?" She took it and tried to get a better look, but only shrugged. "Well, maybe it's a gem of some kind." She even tried to break it, but nothing came of it. We went inside, and I snatched up my phone to take a picture of it. "I'm sure the locals might know. It could be worth something," I suggested. She seemed to like that idea, so I grabbed my coat and we left toward the nearby village. I forgot all about the internet and about any other problems, my focus shifting entirely to our new discovery. To my surprise, though, the people in the secluded Hungarian mountains didn't seem very thrilled to talk with us. I don't know for sure if it was because of xenophobia, or maybe because they just don't like Americans in general, but Britt and I were soon standing in the city square feeling completely lost, as the locals seemed to run from us. "Maybe they think it's a bad omen?" I suggested. There was one, a man dressed as a priest, that seemed to want to approach us, but hesitated. Was he worried that his fellow villagers would shun him for even talking to us? Wisely, he gestured for us to follow him toward the courtyard nearby, and whispered in a hushed tone, "Where did you find this?" "Under a rental property. We're staying there for the week. My company owns it," I told him. The priest said a little Hungarian prayer and made the sign of the cross as he told us to dispose of it. "What? What are you talking about?" Brittany asked. "That is what is known as a Lederk. It's the seat of a demon. You must destroy it immediately," he insisted. My wife and I looked at each other with both fear and skepticism. "Surely you aren't superstitious, Father. It's just an egg," I insisted. The priest mumbled several more prayers as he refused to talk to us any further, and soon Britt and I found ourselves wandering back toward the trails that led to the isolated cottage. As we did, she started to furiously search online for any information on the weird name the priest had given the egg. Meanwhile, I held it close to my body, finding its surface curiously warm. "Alan, listen to this!" She squealed excitedly as she grabbed my arm. "Ouch! What is it?" I asked. "It's an article on the egg. The Lederk is said to give its owner endless bounties wherever your heart desires. To whomever holds it, any wish can become reality. You think any of that could be true?" she wondered as we made it up the steps. If so, that priest was trying to get his own paws on it. What a scumbag, I realized as we looked at the dark egg again. "It's got to be just an old wives' tale," Brittany said with a nervous chuckle. We didn't say anything as we both just stood there in the den, staring at the egg and pondering over what to do about it. "Well, clearly no one here wants it, so why don't we just take it home?" I suggested. Brittany's eyes widened in surprise and glee. Clearly she was thinking the same thing. "It would be okay, right? I mean, it's not like it's really lucky. It just looks so cool," she suggested. We were in agreement without even so much as a second thought, and the strange collectible seemed to shine a little brighter as a result. The rest of our week seemed to be boring in comparison. Every day, Brittany and I were imagining what we thought the bizarre egg might bring us. It's like we were waiting for it to hatch or something. I know it's probably sounding silly, but like I said before, neither of us had ever had a good life growing up. This was our chance to really get a taste of that. There was also a growing unease between us and the village. We tried to enjoy the sights and sounds of the area, but after the discovery of the egg, they treated us differently. Maybe they're jealous, Brittany teased. She liked to polish the strange object or hold it close. It made it seem special when she suggested that others wanted our prize, and in time I accepted that idea. But still, nothing indicated that the egg would cause anything special to happen, and some of the information we found gave it a sinister connotation. The connections to devil worship and succubuses were a little unnerving and made me reconsider what the priest warned. But altogether, it just seemed like a knick-knack. And just when I was thinking I would finally give it up and toss the damn thing, it happened. Near the end of our vacation, the moment we'd been waiting for. We were sleeping, having enjoyed the last good time out and about stargazing, when there was a slamming noise on our door. I jolted up and Brittany grabbed my arm as I peered out the sheer curtains. There were at least a half dozen villagers surrounding our cottage, some with what appeared to be weapons. Suddenly, this awkwardness had reached a boiling point. They wanted us out. As I grabbed my jacket, I went to the door and tried to understand their broken English. It was easy enough. Le Dirk! Le Dirk! Le Dirk! They wanted the egg. Brittany was at my side, puzzling over what to do. Maybe we should just give it to them, she asked. I looked at the trinket, holding it in my hand and feeling this strange coldness come from the egg. Give it up, or we will burn! Another man shouted from the crowd. Then it began to storm, and I don't mean like a summer rain. I'm talking about a monsoon. The clouds opened up and created a downpour with lightning and hail. The villagers started to scream and run for cover as it became so bad that they couldn't see what was in front of them. Then, before I knew it, we were alone again, and Brittany held her hand over her mouth to try and hide a smile. Well, that was crazy. I commented, but she had a different viewpoint. It's the egg, don't you see? It protected us, she said. I looked at the egg and shook my head, not sure I could believe something so crazy. But after that, things took a turn for us. The village treated us with kindness the next day as we left for the airport. They even gave us gifts. And at the airport, we were bumped up to first class without even a word. And the good fortune got better from there. I told my boss about the rats we were dealing with at the cottage, and he gave me a bonus check for the trouble. Sorry you had to deal with that, Alan. I hope you didn't have any other problems, he said. I almost considered telling him about the egg, but I was quiet. I was starting to hoard the egg as though it really was good luck. Then we started to push our limits. I bought lottery tickets. Brittany would sometimes take out extra money, and our balance would stay the same. Everything was going our way. Honestly, I wasn't thinking about what else the egg would do because it was gradual. You don't realize that you stop talking to your partner. It just sort of happens. You don't realize that you're working more hours or keeping secrets from each other. Suddenly, Brittany and I were jealous of each other. Suddenly, we were greedy. I remember one time I couldn't find the egg and lashed out at her. It got to the point where I was bruising her, and then in my frustration, I realized she never had it at all. It had simply fallen behind the bed. Oh, Brittany, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, I said. But instead of responding in fear or even anger, she responded with the same vicious desire to hold the egg. It was never enough. Suddenly, we were fighting over it on a daily basis. We would want our wish to be the one that was granted, and neither of us could see what was happening to our marriage, to our happiness. Then one day, when she was at work, I went to check on the egg and I saw something that changed everything. It wasn't as shiny as before. It was dull, and my entire attitude changed. I can't explain it, but suddenly I was repulsed by this thing. Why had we kept it for so long? Had it actually caused us any good fortune that we had, or was it all our imagination? I grabbed the stone in frustration and made for the den. I was tired of being a slave to this thing. Then, suddenly, Brittany came in early from work. Her eyes were full of rage and horror. "What are you doing? Are you crazy?" She ran to grab it. "It's not worth it. Don't you see? We've been at each other's throats for weeks now, and it's gotten worse. Look at your arm. Look at my face. This thing is making us animals," I told her. "You can't smash it. We need it. This is our whole life you're throwing away," she insisted. "This stone isn't what gave us happiness. We were happy before we found it. Don't you remember, babe?" I asked desperately. And she couldn't see it for the false idol that it was. And just to prove my point, I raised the egg up and slammed it down to the floor. But to my surprise, it didn't shatter. It bounced. It pushed itself, seemingly through the air, toward my wife, and she clawed for it, eager to wrap her fingers around the stone. "Brittany, stop! It's not worth it," I told her. And she wasn't listening, though. She was still grasping the egg like it could make everything better. And maybe it could, but I didn't want a part of it anymore. "Brittany, listen to me. It's either that thing goes, or I do," I warned. Her eyes shone with darkness again, and I knew her mind was made up. "Go, then. What need do I have for you when I have this?" she shrieked. Her eyes were rushing with tears. "Listen to yourself. This isn't you. It's got you under some kind of spell," I insisted. But she didn't want to stop it. She pulled away from me and ran. I watched as she left me that night, with little more than the clothes on her back, and suddenly I felt an emptiness inside my soul. It was as wide as a valley and probably deeper than the ocean. But it wasn't her that I was suddenly missing. It was the egg. And I realized at last what it had taken from me. I felt nothing. I was nothing. I held it together for a few more moments and tried my best to smile as I realized that I was okay with that. I didn't need anything. And the emptiness was welcome here. I hope you enjoyed Good Eggs by author Kyle Harrison, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed the tales you've heard tonight, I'd like to remind you one last time that tonight's featured author can be found by visiting our website. Just visit simplyscarypodcast.com/Harrison. You'll find many a tale available from Mr. Harrison. But if you have read them all, not to worry. He always has room for more. As a reminder, if you decide to give any of this talented author's stories a read, please consider leaving them a quality review and a kind word, or a thoughtful public comment and an upvote, and be sure to let them know you heard about them on this program and that me, Otis Gyrie, sent you. It means more to me than you can imagine, and I'm sure Kyle would much appreciate it as well. Thanks again for your support of this show and of tonight's featured author. Now, before we go, I'd also like to take a moment to thank you personally for joining me on this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference and would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium, extended edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes, featuring Twice the Terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the Patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase season passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs, or become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Jarry channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Storytime, dating back to 2014. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram too. Just search for Otis Jarry. Until next week, stay spooky. Get some sleep, if you can. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories, performed by yours truly, Otis Jarry. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Jarry channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.